Blog Talk Radio.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome to Reflecting His Gift. I'm Sissy Ellison, your host, and I believe that everyone has a God-given purpose, a gift or a talent, a testimony of grace that is meant to impact this world for the good and bring glory and honor to God. I also believe, as Romans 8:28 tells us, that all things, even the bad stuff, work together for the good of those who've been called according to God's purpose. God is famous for making lemonade out of lemons, giving hope to the hopeless, using the foolish to confound the wise, and even using our worst pain and losses to make us stronger, to teach us important lessons, and then to use us as beacons of light as we comfort others who may encounter the same trials. Tonight we're going to talk about a subject that many people avoid and shy away from. However, it is something that we need to be thinking about and praying about. We cringe in horror when we watch movies that portray human trafficking and prostitution, but sometimes we don't realize that it is occurring right in our midst every day, somewhere in our world, our country, and our city, as we speak, every day. Women, men, and even children are purchased for sex. Not only is this participation in perversion and sexual immorality robbing these victims of their dignity and their sanity, they often become slaves to alcohol and drugs just so they can keep doing what they're doing without feeling the reality of it. And not only that, many human trafficking victims develop personality disorders such as clinical depression, multiple personality and dissociative identity disorders, because they just can't cope with the reality of what they are doing and what is being done to them. At the root of all these lives is usually a sad and horrifying story of abuse. Most women and men who enter into this nightmarish existence can share stories of their own molestation or abuse as children. There is a growing concern for these precious captives, but not nearly enough. My guest tonight is Janice Leffler. Not only does she devote her life and her God-given gifts and talents to the rescue of those enmeshed in the ugly web of human trafficking and prostitution, she herself was rescued from that horror. Only by the grace of God through Jesus Christ did Janice find her way out of that pit of darkness. It was not enough for her to find her way out. She has been compelled to reach back into those depths to provide help for captives who are still in that same situation, offering them a way out through safe houses, counseling, and her Christian witness. She'll share her own compelling story tonight and then the story of her ministry work. It's my pleasure to welcome Janice Leffler to Reflecting His Gift. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Sissy. How are you? Thank you so much for taking time to do this.
Oh, I'm so glad you're on our show tonight. Janice, I believe that our early beginnings can often indicate who we will become later. Those beginnings, of course, start with birth and early childhood. Would you share your early beginnings with our listeners tonight so that we can see and understand this wonderful person you have become named Janice Leffler?
Thank you. Yes, I'll be glad to. I was actually born in Arkansas, and my parents divorced when I was young, and my mom, I understand now that the abuse that she suffered as a child at the hands of her father created a generational pattern. I didn't understand it very well growing up, but you know how it is. You start to understand things better the older you get looking back on it. But so there was a generational curse, a pattern that was set up. And because of her beginnings that were very rural in, you know, picking cottons and cotton fields and that kind of thing, there were things that she was very naive to, such as drugs and pimps and the whole underworld that I ended up getting sucked into. So she had, you know, was trying to find her own way in life after her divorce, and she had two young children, my sister and I. She was a very loving mother. I never doubted her love for me, but she, began, bringing a series of men throughout the years into her life and subsequently into our lives. And there were things that happened that she just did not see. I don't think she even knew that it was possible. Most people still today don't even know it was possible for these things to happen. There's only now been a growing awareness of this whole underworld, and I'm so glad that there is. But there were different men that came along that were, particularly once I became 12, 13 years old, that in that range, who made sexual advances towards me and molested me and those kind of things. I had become, at one point, I befriended a little girl in our neighborhood after we had moved to Memphis, and we became sort of partners in crime, or, you know, we had an allegiance because her mom, she was in a very similar situation. Her mom was an alcoholic, actually, but had the same kind of environment with men, different men, various men over, and that kind of thing, violence, unpredictable people, unpredictable events and circumstances. And at any moment, you know, violence could break out. Someone could be in your room trying to do something to you, all these things. So yeah. we actually would set up booby traps for fear of who was going to sneak in our bedroom at night and that kind of thing. So I had a friendship with her that way. But,
what an unhealthy alliance. What an unhealthy alliance that was. But I guess it was all you had, so you clung to each other. You mentioned that
exactly.
The abuse of your childhood made you very angry inside, and that is truly understandable. It would be hard enough for an adult to handle the pain that you had to endure, but how did you deal with that anger as a child, and how did you cope?
Not well, as most children do. They don't cope well. But I felt so rejected and so unworthy of love, unworthy of any kind of positive attention. And most of all, I wanted someone to listen to me. I wanted someone to acknowledge the things that had been done. And I ended up suffering from insomnia, from migraines. I had a hiatal hernia. I felt more alienated every year that passed. And I never felt like I fit into any group, actually. I became very isolated. And I had friends and acquaintances, but I never quite, never quite connected or fit in. I was always kind of a loner.
Bless your heart. Well, did you regularly attend school? And if you did, how did your home life affect your schoolwork and your choice of friends and your feeling about yourself in that school crowd?
I actually did. Fortunately, I was able to, I was always a smart kid. And I actually many times, depending on what year it was in the, the higher level classes and the gifted mm-hmm. courses and that kind of thing. And I was able to
yeah.
hang with it and kind of
yeah.
keep a decent grades with very minimal attendance and minimal effort.
Mm-hmm.
But it just so happens that I was able to do that. You know, the school comes easier to some people than others. It was easy for me. And so I was able to kind of do that. But, my even among my teachers, though, as I got a little older and I had more outward signs such as clothing and, you know, scantily clad, and I looked like who I was, you know, later on,
yeah.
you know, I was so alienated. I became like the byword and the rumor of the school. And I had teachers that would stop me in the hallways and ask me, don't you realize that the teachers are talking about you in the teacher's lounge? Well, no, I didn't realize that. I was so isolated. My
yeah.
feelings, because of the circuit that I was in, it was all pedophilia. So I was trafficked to men. I wasn't trafficked to anyone else. I had no dealings at all with anyone who was my age. So
mm-hmm.
when I went to school, I just slipped in and slipped out and went to classes. So I didn't think that I was doing anything wrong as far as at school. So I didn't understand when
yeah.
teachers or anyone else had an issue with me because of how I looked. Because I was actually pretty quiet. I wasn't, you know, I was rebellious, but not there. I would just kind of go in and do my work and leave. So,
yeah.
But I surely was not accepted. So,
But you did a tremendous job of holding yourself together as a child, because my goodness, what you were dealing with, no child should have ever had to encounter any of that. Well, it was around this time, Janice, that someone befriended you, and not in a good way. Would you tell us about this man and your relationship with him?
Sure. When I was 14, I met a man named Mac, and I met him, a couple of friends of mine and I went into, it's called a head shop, just where they sell bongs and different smoking paraphernalia and that kind of thing. We just went in out of curiosity, I think, because that's where the cool kids went, right? And we went and met this man, and he actually befriended the three of us. He was a master manipulator, and he got three different results, actually, from the three different ones of us. And I was sort of the mid-range. One of my friends who had a more stable family life, and she lived with her father and stepmom and was taking, you know, she was in church and involved in youth ministries and that kind of thing. She hung around him for not very long and decided it was weird and she didn't like him, and she just kind of went on.
Yeah.
My other friend and I, he pulled me in mostly because he listened to me, which is just, he was able to quickly find what worked with every single girl. With every single girl that he had, it was not hard. I mean, it's candy from a baby. It's actually not hard at all. So,
and you mentioned that you wanted someone very badly to listen to, and it made you angry that they didn't. So he was giving you, he did radar in on that, didn't he? And he was giving you what you needed emotionally, kind of, wasn't he?
Absolutely. And he did that differently and uniquely with every single girl, which is what they all do. They're very good at it.
Yeah.
So he used emotional manipulation. I was very terrified of him, but I was very, I wouldn't try to go against him at all, because I knew what would happen. I had seen what would happen to other girls, and I was scared of what could happen. So I never said no to him. I knew that you didn't say no to him. You just did what he said.
Right.
But he used more emotional manipulation with me. So he started talking to me about, told so-and-so about you, and he really likes you, and he wants to meet you. And what he did with me was he had me begin to call and leave messages on these different men's voice machines. And he would set up dates for me. And it only took a couple of times before I started figuring out that it wasn't a normal date. I never saw any money change hands. This was just, everyone's story is a little unique. This was just mine. I never saw money change hands at all. I just eventually figured out that that's what was going on. He would just set up these, and he would drive me back and forth usually, or sometimes they would pick me up to these encounters. And the first time I recognized that something was off, this man came and picked me up. He was on his lunch hour, so it was during the day, took me to his house, and there were family photographs and pictures of a woman. I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend. I don't know. It was never talked about. And it was, there was no dinner, no movie, no how are you, you know, anything at all. Straight to the bedroom, and it was very uncomfortable, made me very nauseated, and he actually gave a bad report back to Mac about the whole encounter. Because I didn't perform well, because I was sick to my stomach and was not, was not very seasoned at this yet. And so you would see this, it's a very strange psychology that happens, because I wanted Mac to be proud of me. I wanted him to like me. I wanted, you know, my friendship with him was important at the time. And so I thought that the right thing to do at the time was, you know, the last thing I wanted to be seen as was a little girl in an adult world.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to think that I was, you know, just, little, or I couldn't handle it or whatever. So I just made it my goal to become hardened and to be able to perform, you know, without any emotion and without any attachment.
No, what you described, it just brought tears to my eyes. It just broke my heart because I could just see you were really just a child. You were just
barely.
And it's heartbreaking to think that was what you wanted someone to care about you or to respect you so much and to listen to you that you were willing to go through this. It just breaks my heart for you. And I just have to say at this point, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that happened to you because it's heartbreaking. It really is.
Thank
as bad
you.
A friend
I appreciate
as this man, yeah, really, truly, my heart hurts right now for you. As bad a friend as this man was, you looked up to him in an odd way because, like you said, you wanted him to be proud of you. And I think that's the relationship that many prostitutes have with their pimps. As bad as they are at least someone. And many times these women haven't had fathers to turn to depend on. And if they did, they often abused them. Don't you think a lot of women who regularly engage in prostitution have a love-hate relationship with their pimps? They hate them for what they're making them do, but still they are the only somebody they have. And so they endure the things they're made to do. Mm-hmm. It was like that for you, wasn't it, Janice?
Absolutely. It's called, I believe it's called Stockholm Syndrome, and they every single one of them have it. And they will not, by the way, they will not use the word pimp at all. They often, most of the time, will say boyfriend. And in their mind, there is a thick, thick mind control. In their mind, this is their boyfriend. So the same man who abuses them, they can also call on if a John gets out of line or if another pimp or just anybody because they're in this very violent underworld. So anybody can at any time kill them, literally. And so they can call on this man who, you know, to him it's just a financial investment, but to them it's the only thing they have. So they, you know, so this same man will come in and suddenly be the hero, you know, to beat up the John or kick him out or whatever. So they get a very confused emotional attachment to the
right.
Pimp. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because in one way they are allowing them and selling them for allowing them to be abused and molested and harmed. But on the other hand, they're protecting them when it gets kind of out of line. So it is very confusing. I'm sure it is, and that's so terrible. You also mentioned that you were never his top girl. But is there a competition among the sex workers to be the boyfriend's top girl? And why do you think that is? It almost sounds like sibling rivalry.
To a degree, there is. First and foremost, they are survivalists. They are surviving one minute to the next. But so that's not the first thing on their mind, but it is kind of an undercurrent. And the reason being is that there's a false sense of security. And the pimps that have a higher status, that have higher rank in the system, they have more layers of security. You'd have to knock off basically all the guards and the guys around them to get to them. So there is a false sense of security that comes along with being the top girl. Plus the fact that, you know, who doesn't want to feel loved? Who doesn't want to feel like the favorites? You know, so both things play in. Yeah.
What a place to be a favorite, but you know, if it works, it works, doesn't it? An emotionally needy person. I understand this man cut you loose at 16 years old because you had become too old, oh my goodness, for his stable of girls. It's fair to say then that he catered to pedophiles who preferred only young girls. And it's a horrifying thought that there are children being sold for sex in our city, in our world, and yet it's an epidemic. What happens to the soul and mind of a child who is subjected to sex slavery, Janice? What happened to your mind and soul during that time?
Well, you become very detached from reality. And, you know, there was a running joke in the other members of people that I was related to, my family, that would say that I was in left field. You know, it was like, oh, Janice is in left field. And that kind of became my reality. And, you know, I was a daydreamer by nature. Some of it was by nature, but it was just accentuated with the abuse and the trauma. But any child becomes detached from reality, and your soul becomes hidden away for protection. And I was very defensive like a wounded animal. I was very, very angry, not at all the person I am today. I was very angry and snotty and sarcastic and very defensive to anybody around. It was just a layer of protection. But the kids, by the way, are a lot more expensive. And I just have to throw that in before I forget. The children that are being sold, they're a very high commodity, and the younger kids bring in much more money. By the time that we end up getting to these girls, normally they're between 17 and 19-ish, sometimes a little older, and they're actually aging out, and they're becoming at risk of being killed, actually. The younger kids are where the money is.
Oh, my goodness. How mm-hmm. young are they? How young are they? I mean, what is the youngest that
the,
you...
Literally infancy. I mean, literally infancy.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, there is one of the trafficking victims that we've been working with. She got in my car it was not too long ago. She got in my car and just absolutely fell apart and bawled when she realized that her two-year-old daughter, was being sexually abused and groomed for the industry, because at this point they are breeding the next generation. We're into at least the second generation that I know of. So now they are just breeding them, and of course there's abductions and all of it plays in. There really is, sadly, there is no limit to how young is too young. But I have been asked many times about boys. And boys, yes, absolutely. We've not been able to find them yet. Boys are considered exotic, and they have a much higher price than the girls.
Okay.
So there are little boys in the system also.
Mm-mm. Well, mm-hmm. It's a horrifying thought. It really, truly is, but it does happen, and you can testify to that. Oh, my goodness. Well, along this sad way, you encountered another man who told you about Jesus Christ. Tell us about Frank and how he witnessed to you, and what was that like?
I love Frank. He will always be one of my favorite people in the world, even though he will introduce himself and always say, "I'm not a righteous man. I'm not a righteous man." None of us are, you know, but I find it endearing that he comes out and says, "I'm not a righteous man. I just love God." But at the time, this was after I met him, after I had been cut loose from Mac, and I felt betrayed. When he just suddenly dropped me, which is odd. I know most people think that you should just run out, you know, with Hallelujah chorus in the background, but I didn't know what to do or where to go. And I was in this.
As sick as it was, that was your security.
That was it. That was all I knew, and that was the community that I was in. And so I ended up actually developing a strange little bartering system in that community because I was just sort of a vagrant. I kind of went from couch to couch, and there was payment expected for anything, a dinner, a place to sleep, a ride somewhere. There was payment expected, and everyone knew who I was, and you know, that kind of thing. So it just kind of continued on in a strange way during those years. So my friends and I would go to the clubs and the bars, and yes, I was too young to be in them, but we all knew how to get in and which ones we could get in and that kind of thing, and I had been in them so long. Mac took me to them many times because he would shop me at clubs. That's just the way he did it. He would take his girls to clubs and shop you there. But so we would go to the clubs, shut them down to 3 or 4 in the morning, then end up at like a Waffle House or a Pancake House, and I would call Frank, and he would literally, this man would get out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning most times after everything else was closed, and come and go drive to the Pancake House and just sit there and talk, and all he ever talked about was Jesus Christ, and he talked about him in such a way that it was a friend he had just talked to that morning, and it was fascinating to me. I don't know if anybody else at the table ever cared, but to me it was fascinating, and I would always call him to come talk to us just so I could hear him talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, what did his witness about Christ do for you? I understand that you didn't accept all that, but you did absorb it, but you kind of allowed him to talk to you about Jesus anyhow, and sometimes you even prayed to God. Why? Did you believe there was a God and that he somehow was watching and that he loved you?
I did. I actually had an encounter. It was a brief one, but it was an important one. When I was 8 years old, visiting my dad, and he would take us to this little Baptist church whenever we went for visitations with him. And I had an encounter with the Holy Spirit, and I honestly think God just knew I was going to need that to carry me through the years that were coming up that he, you know, saw were coming my way. And so I was baptized at 8 years old in this little church. Didn't understand. Well, I mean, I understood that God was real. I didn't know anything about the Bible. Didn't for all that time, but that seed was there and never left me, which I guess is probably why Frank's stories were so fascinating to me.
Right,
but
right.
It did eventually. He would always invite me to church, and I would always have a reason not to go. You know, but eventually, he ended up moving away out of town, and eventually there was another young couple that invited me to, that actually ended up being the same church he was always trying to get me to go to.
Yeah.
And so I accepted the invitation. And
well, we're going to hear about that in a minute. This
okay.
is a wonderful story. I want to spend some time on this because this is a
okay.
good part. So, but we're going to pause for just a few moments for a word from our sponsor to hear about the wonderful an exciting Woods End series by author Alexandra Clare. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
The Woods End series by Alexandra Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Scheel as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Woods. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexandra Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at AlexandraClare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to Reflecting His Gifts. We're talking tonight with Janice Leffler. Janice has been sharing her testimony of being, oh my goodness, a captive during the very young years of her life, a captive of human trafficking and sex slavery. And you know what, though? God was looking out for her, and she was describing an experience she had. She was baptized when she was eight, and that God had place that in her, and I really believe he did. That was hidden away in you, Janice, for to blossom in another time. He never took his hand off of you. And she was sharing that there was a man who continually shared with her about Jesus Christ through all these years of her sex slavery. I believe that nothing we share with anyone about Jesus is ever wasted. It's precious seed that is planted in human hearts and souls. And if we pray over that word and witness that we share, it could bring forth the fruit of salvation. I'm sure this man, Frank, prayed for you, and maybe there were others that you didn't know. Did this seed that was planted in your heart bring forth the fruit of salvation finally? And if so, how did that happen for you, Janice?
Finally, yes, when I went to church. And I was at first just fascinated with the love that that everyone had, particularly for the kids. It was fascinating for me to see how well they treated the children and that they were loved and valued. And it was just so different for me to see in a community like that. And so I was praying one particular evening service, and I had begun to learn what the Bible basically said about what was right and wrong, and I, you know, learning that some of my ideas were completely wrong and my thinking was twisted. And as it began to unravel, I started feeling very bad because I kind of liked this God. And so, you know, I was growing more and more fond of who I was learning Jesus Christ was. And I was praying and had this, you know, huge Holy Spirit encounter where he just rent the veil and just came and spoke directly to me.
Wow.
And he knew what I was feeling, that I was feeling completely not just unworthy and dirty and unworthy of him and his love, but also feeling completely helpless to behave right, to act right.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I was trying, and I didn't understand myself. I didn't understand why I did certain things, and I didn't seem to be able to control it. And he basically said, don't worry about it. You spend time with me. I've waited a long time to have this conversation with you. I've waited a long time to have time with you. You follow me, and I'll worry about the rest. And he did. He did exactly that.
Oh, praise God. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, that is what you needed, and that's what anybody needs who goes through anything. We're all sinners, and we all need
Absolutely.
Jesus to different degrees, and we're all dirty and not worthy because the ground at the foot of the cross is level, and he's there for all of us. Well, he gave you deliverance and salvation, and he gave you a husband. Tell us about how you met your husband and then married.
Yes, my husband, his name is Vince. He showed up from Los Angeles. He's a musician, and he actually came from Los Angeles to Memphis looking for music work. And the drummer that he came with ended up about a year later going on to Nashville. But they both at the time went to the church. They just literally showed up at the church. He went up to the altar one day for prayer, and several of us went up to pray for him. Now, his version of the story is really sweet, so I'll tell it the way he always tells this.
Okay.
He had his eyes closed, praying, you know, asking God to send him an angel. And he opens his eyes, and I was standing there.
Oh, that's
his version. I don't know, but it was
that's
sweet. It was a sweet story. But we had a very short engagement. He asked me to marry him about 10 days after that, and
wow.
We got married to about 2 months after that, and we've been married ever since.
That is so awesome. I understand you've been married 22 years. You don't look like you've been married 22 years. You're so pretty, Janice.
Thank you.
And you have children.
Sweet.
You have children,
yes.
And even a granddaughter now. I can't believe that. What have these years been like for you with Jesus, a husband, children, and grandchildren? What is this like? Is this like making up for everything else you went through?
Absolutely.
Like?
The verse is so true that he restores the years the locusts have eaten, and he does it in a way that is so beyond you think that it could never possibly ever happen, but he does.
Yes.
The early years were very difficult. I didn't understand myself. I didn't understand my own triggers. I didn't understand some of the insecurities and things that happened. So I kind of white knuckled it through the first, you know, 4 or 5 years, but God is good and he brought us through it. And I never in a million years, if you'd have told me when I was 16 years old what my life would look like today, I wouldn't have believed you. Never in a million years would I have thought so.
He is a miracle worker. He just really is. I think many women and men who've been through what you have would naturally struggle with shame and guilt and feelings of inferiority. You described your own bout with those feelings, even in church. What was that like for you, and how did you overcome those feelings?
I was so enthralled with God. I was so in love with God because he was truly the perfect man. And in a way, I was kind of always seeking that. I was always looking for the perfect man, and I found him in Jesus Christ. And I was in the church doors every time they were opened, and I sort of got the feeling at times that I was a little unnerving to the other church ladies, especially in the early years when I was a little more unrefined. But nevertheless, there I was. I wasn't going away. And so I had gone on this women's retreat, and I came home, And this particular day, I was reading through my Bible, and there were certain words that were jumping off the page. Israel many times was compared to a harlot, and
yes.
was called a harlot or a whore or a brazen prostitute or an mm-hmm. adulteress. And those words this particular day just absolutely were salt in a wound, and I was undone, literally prostrate on the floor, bawling, crying, and asking God, where in the world am I ever going to fit in your plan, in your purpose, with your people? Because I surely didn't feel like I did. And I was, and I needed to know what I meant to him, who I was, what I meant to him, who I was in this plan. And if it, and if the answer was that I was going to be the dog getting crumbs under the table forever, that was okay. I was prepared to accept that, but I just needed to know. And because I couldn't deal with any more disappointment, I just needed to know. So as I was on the floor just crying out to God for this answer, the phone rang. And so this was literally the call, which is interesting. But it was a dance teacher of mine, because I had gone back to, you know, begin to take some classes, which was just a hobby that I love, dance. And I had stayed after class one night, and we got in a conversation about her daughter, Kelly, who had an addiction and was working the streets as a prostitute to support her addiction. And looking back on it, there's no telling, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But she called me, and Kelly had called her the night before. She'd been beaten, and called her to come pick her up, which she did. Now, this woman was already raising her 5-year-old son, so there's a very tense relationship between her and her daughter that was already going on. But she called me, and she said, Janice, I have to work today. I don't know what to do with her. Can you please go talk to her? And so I said yes, and I was completely, absolutely, emotionally undone. I mean, totally raw out on the floor at that moment, okay? So she asked me to go talk to Kelly, and I told her yes, because I had just gotten done telling God I would serve him no matter what my answer was, that he was worthy, he was God, he was good, and he was worthy to be worshipped and served no matter what. So I'd just gotten done with that conversation. I hung up the phone. The irony was not lost to me. I was a little bit irritated with it, but I hung up the phone thinking, you know, at this moment, what I needed more than anything was for God to tell me that I needed to hear these words, that I was beautiful, that I was lovely, that my life was unique and was worth redeeming, and that I was worth so much more than I realized I was worth, and I did not hear it. What I got was a phone call to go tell it to another prostitute who needed to hear the same words.
Yeah.
So I did, and I had a great conversation with her, and she did really well. Well, she actually, there's a longer story behind that, but she called me months later from a hospital in Nashville. She didn't remember how she had gotten there, but she'd had a near-death experience. She'd been hit by a van, had a near-death experience, and was speaking like a mature Christian. She had, when she woke up from this, they were about to turn the machines off on her. They were waiting on someone to come ID the body, basically, protocol, and no one ever came to ID her. And this one doctor wanted to try a last-ditch effort to save her life and did. And she had 3 days, which is such a significant number, and I thought it was so merciful that God gave her 3 days of amnesia to where she didn't remember who she was, or anything she had done. All she knew was her experience with God and with Jesus Christ during the time that she was dead, and it changed. And it rocked her world, changed her life.
Yeah. Well, what you're describing is often a remedy that God uses for those with low self-esteem and who feel unlovely, and He often will appoint those. Of us, because I've gone through that too in my life, to love others and to give to them what they wish someone would give to them, you know?
Right.
And it's such a healing thing. It's such a healing thing to become part of the solution in the world instead of part of the problem, and to be the love and the comfort and the answer for someone else, because in doing that, you are clothing your own soul with comfort and self-esteem. And it just comes back to you, doesn't it? So God knew what he was doing when he gave you someone to minister to. He was actually answering your prayer, wasn't he?
He absolutely was. And that is become the foundation for how I minister to others, by the way, and how I mentor others. You know, you end up finding your healing and reaching out and giving to other people.
Right, right. Janice, there are many changes that occur in the emotions and the minds of children, women, and men who are victimized by molestation and human trafficking. Human minds, bodies, and souls were never meant to be subjected to those horrors. And often these victims develop dissociative identity disorder, multiple personalities, and things like that. Can you explain to our listeners what these disorders are and why they occur?
Yes. A dissociative identity disorder used to be called multiple personality disorder, and more recently it's become to be known as dissociative identity, which better describes it, actually. But it happens when a person undergoes a trauma that's too much for their mind to process, so they kind of check out. They go into another altered state of consciousness because you can't escape the trauma that's going on with your body. So the only way to escape is in your mind. And there's a sliding scale, sort of like autism has a scale. You can have mild dissociative identity disorder or can have very severe dissociative identity disorder. But what has happened today in the sex industry is that the drug cartels have taken over the industry. And they are very much more sophisticated. The difference between the story I just told you about my experience and what's going on today is night and day. There are some similarities, but it is so much darker today, and it's so much more sophisticated today. What they have found to do is to create alter personalities on purpose, to create different alter personalities and to program them. And believe it or not, even, you know, most of your run-of-the-mill pimps and prostitutes, the pimps, because they have such a sophisticated network nowadays, know they're very highly trained in how to do this. And there's a lot of occult, demonic charging that happens in their, you know, what they're doing also. So they end up with this perfect, you know, mind control techniques that were actually started by the Nazis in World War II. But this perfect storm has emerged, and underneath the entire system, you have witch covens that are summoning and sending forth demons that end up acting as gatekeepers to the alter personalities. And like I said, this is a sliding scale. Not always is it this sophisticated, but I personally have been surprised at how often this is the case. I have been surprised at how often it is this sophisticated. That, you know, you end up with a girl who not only has altered personalities but has trigger words. Her pimp can literally, we've had girls almost out recently, and her pimp can text one thing to her or say one thing to her, bring up an altered personality, and she goes right back, or any kind of trigger word, and there's runner personalities and suicide alters and all kinds of things. So the rehabilitation work has gotten very complicated. It's doable, but it's more complicated than it ever was.
Yeah. Hi, Susie. This is Alex, and I just have a quick question for your guest, for Janice. Janice, you're sounding like Freedom Encounters, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with Ken and Sylvia Thornburg, Freedom Encounters, because they have a ministry where they help people escape from satanic ritual abuse. And there are so many parallels, you know, with that and what you're talking about. And I'm just wondering if you are aware of that ministry.
I'm not aware of that ministry. I would like to know exactly what the ministry is, but I am very familiar with satanic ritual abuse and how it plays in, because the two things overlap and very much you find the same thing in the same people. And the nature of satanic ritual abuse is that many of the victims don't remember a lot of it, because there's layers of amnesia that are put in there. So a lot of times we're going along with rehabilitation and counseling to a sex trafficking victim and then discover along the way through counseling that there has been satanic ritual abuse.
Right.
So,
I just friended you on Facebook, so if you friend me back, I'll send you some information. But it's freedomencounters.com. They have a wonderful website. They get right to the point about these subjects. And I understand what you're talking about when you say altars and triggers, and yes, it's so sophisticated and it's so satanic.
It is, and thank you so much for making me aware of that. The more networking we do, the awareness is working, and the more networking we do, God is putting together a formidable army, and I am just loving watching it. I'm loving being a part of it, and I'm loving watching it. There's some good people, some good mighty warriors that are rising up. I love it.
Yeah, and we see the power of Jesus Christ in that because, through deliverance, and absolutely. Okay,
it's the only thing they're afraid of. They're not afraid of Buddha. They're not afraid of Muhammad. They're not afraid of Krishna. They are terrified of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And so much of what you're talking about, too, runs generationally in families.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It sure does. And like I said before, these girls, a lot of times they don't realize or they'll remember in our just conversations, oh, yeah, my aunt used to do this weird thing. I just thought it was a game. I didn't realize. Or Grandma so-and-so had this weird bag of bones, and there's, I don't know, you know, pincushion dolls. And depending on what ring they are in, some of the rings are Haitian. Some are the Mexican rings with the Santa Muerta. There's different brands, but they're basically at the root all the same. It's all witchcraft, and then there's the witch covens underneath the whole thing that are pretty much kind of running the show. I mean, to be honest, because they're the ones that are giving the power, so to speak, to the different operations that are going on.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So do you have a network in the Memphis area where people come together and work to help people escape from this lifestyle?
Yes, we do. And most of them right now are fledgling. But like I said, I am amazed at what God is putting together. My group is called the Memphis Mission. You won't find a whole lot about it online for a purpose, because we're in the middle many times of very sensitive things involving people and things that I can't talk about publicly, because of safety purposes,
right.
public figures and whatnot. However, so there's a reason why we have a layer of protection there. So you won't find a whole lot about the Memphis Mission other than little fundraising sites and that kind of thing. But there's other groups that we've been networking with, and most of them, interestingly, are out of South Haven, Mississippi. There's Express Missions International. There's R3 organizations called R3, which is for Reach, Rescue and Redeem, and then there's 51 South, which they are working to start safe houses that are specifically for the rehabilitation. And because it's a very specified rehabilitation, you can't just throw these girls into the drug rehab centers and these kind of and expect miraculous results. It's very specific and unique. So God is putting together a network of people that are very dedicated, and we're all working together. Now, Memphis Mission is one of the only ones that I know of, because when we first started, I was expecting to run into other rescue groups, and I was like, "Where is like crickets? You know, where is everybody?" We're one of the only boots on the ground that are just kind of crazy enough or radical enough to go right in there and talk to the girls and befriend the girls and start relationships with them. And I don't. And by the way, there's a reason for that. You have to actually do have street smarts and kind of know what's going on to navigate safely through that world. It's gotten to where we have a short list of people that we'll actually take to certain places because if somebody doing something, one dumb thing can get people killed. So we don't want to endanger anyone's lives, but. But we're one of the only groups that are in there in the thick of it doing actually a hands-on rescue work with the girls, pulling them out.
Right.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing this work. I'm so glad you're bringing this awareness.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I am honored to be part of it. I really, truly am. I feel like I'm sitting in the seat of royalty. Like it's my honor when we get to go take one of these girls out to. Sometimes we'll get to take them out to dinner or just give them an hour or two outside of their prison. And yes, it can be done. Sometimes we have to buy their time. There's different circumstances. They're all unique. But, but even an hour or so to get them out and watch them relax and watch them be able to be fascinated with simple things like just being at a restaurant, the fact that they get lemon in their tea or lemon in their water and they have two forks and they're trying to figure out which one's the fork and that all the little endearing things that I get to witness, I consider it my honor. I feel like it's me that's lucky,
Right. Satan is all about bondage, all about limiting choices. I mean, many of these people, they haven't had the autonomy to make even simple decisions for themselves. And so when you say that they need more than a drug rehabilitation center, I so agree with you. There's so much more that's needed. I don't know.
Right.
Very many programs that are out really offering that kind of help.
Right. There are not. And the ones that are offering it are not getting a lot of funding because of they're not getting a lot of like the state funding that a lot of the other places get. They're so specific, a lot of the state funding or federal funding is so specific to this thing or that thing. So it's very new. The awareness is new. It's growing and I'm glad that it's growing. But a lot of it is very, not very well funded, but there's a big push behind it. There's a big movement behind it to get it going.
Well, I know Sissy's going to ask you how we can send a donation to you.
Right. I surely will. Thank you, Alex, for entering in. You added a lot to this. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Yes, we will ask that. We are going to ask that definitely. Dennis, I'm a huge believer that every person who's been abused or molested in these ways carries that terrible emotional baggage for a lifetime until they receive the proper counseling, validation, and trauma therapy. I've received trauma therapy, and it changed my life because until certain things can be emptied out and comforted and validated and put to rest, you carry them around all your life, and there are silent screams and unreleased anger in these victims that absolutely has to be vented and validated, or it brings on cycles of self-destructive behavior and chronic addictions that are never ending. How important do you believe trauma therapy, Christian counseling, and Jesus Christ are to victims of sex slavery and human trafficking? And is that available very often to these victims once they seek help?
It is absolutely critical, more now so than ever before, because of the sophisticated level. And many times the girls are unaware of how sophisticated it is until they begin the trauma therapy or the counseling and that kind of thing. Is it available? Yes. Is it available at low cost? Not that I'm aware of.
No,
we do what we can in my group, but it's a small group and it's a big problem. So we're doing what we can. But if everybody does their part and everybody does what they can, we can, do more collectively.
Well, I understand you began a ministry, too, involving dance. And will you share with us how this began and how you're using dance today to help at-risk youth and how they are even entering into these efforts to minister to victims of human trafficking?
Yes, absolutely. When I was going through my healing process, Jesus was taking care of mind and spirit. But the area that was sort of out there in limbo was my body. And so I ended up gravitating towards dance as a way of reclaiming my own body, which was a crime scene. And so it is just kind of a natural outpouring of a need that I had. And so it ended up being a progression of that one call that began with Kelly to mentor other young people that were struggling with issues, using dance as the tool to do it, to mentor them. So we have, it's called Intercession Dance and Guard Theater, Intercession with an S. And it's, we've expanded to include color guard, theater, circ elements such as aerial, silk, and trapeze, and poi, and whatnot. And our, the shows that we do address real life problems that these youth have and relate to. And then more recently, it's become the awareness arm of the human trafficking issue. So we tell through stories through our shows, the stories around that are involving awareness of human trafficking and the healing that comes through Jesus Christ.
Right. That is wonderful. Well, would you tell us what your ministry is doing today as far as reaching out to victims of sex slavery and human trafficking? Where are you right now in your ministry, and what are your goals for the future? And tell us about some of the needs that you have and how others can help. And as Alex said, we want to know how people can help you financially and maybe volunteer in other ways. Tell us what about your ministry and your needs.
Thank you so much. We right now, what we do is simple, but it's complicated at the same time. We basically just contact the girls on, we just answer escort ads, which is usually where they are. And we, you know, we do train people who want to volunteer to do that with us. We definitely need more people who are willing to do that, particularly people who have any kind of quote-unquote past, who kind of have a, you'd be surprised. I was surprised at my own level of street knowledge when I started taking other people out and realized that they did not have it. You know, so we have kind of refined a system. But we go and we just answer escort ads, and we offer to bring them supplies, gift bags, and different things. So that's kind of how we start to build a relationship and build trust with them. And it takes a while to build that with them. And we befriend them that way. We are looking to, right now we've partnered with Express Missions International. They've asked us to go in October on to take a group overseas to Romania and to Thailand, because they're having very similar problems over there. Well, obviously the trafficking problem is huge over there, but the problems with finding the proper rehabilitation. There's a sweet couple in Romania that's been running a safe house for 3 years, and they just are at their wit's end on what to do with these girls, and they really need the experience and the knowledge that my team has. So Express Missions International is trying to send us over there into Thailand to basically do what we're doing now. So you can go. We've actually set up a GoFundMe site. It's GoFundMe/Operation BC. That stands for Operation Broken Chains. So GoFundMe.com/Operation BC. And we're raising funds to take what we're doing overseas, and to, as the network grows and we all join hands in the effort together, we're beginning to make a real impact.
Well, I know you are, and it takes someone maybe who has been through what you've been through to recognize the needs of these precious, precious people and to know how to minister to them. So I've been so touched by your story tonight and by you, Janice, and I know our listeners have been touched and inspired as well. We surely do not always realize the darkness that is all around us, and that many innocent children and many men and women are enduring unspeakable bondage that is affecting their sanity and their souls, leaving scars that only Jesus can heal. Tonight, may we all pray for these captives, that God will send rescue and help to them. And may we all pray for Janice as she serves Jesus and reaches out to those in bondage and shame. I make it my business, Janice, every day to pray. It's always been one of my major prayer requests, because God has made me very, very aware nearly all of these 18 years I've walked with Him of those in this kind of bondage. And so I get up at 5 in the morning, and I can be found downstairs just in the dark weeping sometimes, because it's as if God lets me feel the heartbeat of those who are captives and who are suffering, as you described. And I believe that God hears our prayers and that He dispatches angels. I often pray for God to open windows and doors, to put cell phones in the hands of the captives, to alert passersby, and to just send rescue, because God knows these people are needing rescue. And I'm so thankful for what you're doing. I'm so thankful that Jesus set you free and that you didn't just walk on out the door and go on your merry way. You look back, and you look back at these people who are captives as you were, and you are trying to share your hope with them. God bless you. May we all pray for Janice as she serves Jesus and reaches out to those in bondage and shame. Thank you, Janice, for your courage.
Thank you so much, Sissy. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you. And we've come to the close of another wonderful program. Be sure and tune in next Tuesday evening as I talk with another inspiring guest who reflects God's gifts. Till then, may God keep us all in his tender care. Good night, Janice, and good night, Liz.
Good night.